Angelica, welcome to Dare to Dream. Great to have you back.
Thank you. Hello.
Hello, hello. And I am looking forward to our shadow and shadow work. So if anyone doesn't know what that is, or maybe they heard of it and they don't feel very clear, start this off by sharing your understanding of what a shadow is.
Well, it's very big in terms of its definition, but typically it's something that's unknown in a very simple way, something that is disowned or unknown about ourselves. I think sometimes people assume that shadow means negative, but it really isn't negative necessarily. It's just what is in the dark, not visible to our conscious mind.
Something in the dark, not visible in the conscious mind. So how does the shadow come up in people? How can we identify when we are in our shadow?
Well, the quickest way is most likely people are a lot more familiar with the idea of projection. And projection is really oftentimes when there's something disowned in ourselves, something that we're not in touch with, disowned. And it can be a positive quality or it can be a negative quality. And we project that onto another person. So typically that is also living in our, that those qualities are living in our shadow. So it doesn't have to be a bad thing. It could be that we see someone else's beauty or we see someone else's intelligence and we ourselves don't know ourselves in that way. And so we're very attracted to another person because of that quality. So that would be a way that we would start to recognize something that was might be living in our shadow.
Mm-hmm. So shadow, any part of ourselves, positive or negative, we unconsciously repress or deny, and we avoid shadow selves by projecting onto others what we reject about ourselves, both positive and negative. You said something like, you are so smart, or you are wonderful, or you're sexy, or you're annoying.
Right, or that person's inadequate.
Or you're inadequate, or that's interesting. So people who tend to be very judgmental or critical, mm-hmm. is that what's really going on? Is behind what appears in the outside to be judgment and criticism of others is really a lot of disowning?
Yeah, there's a lot of insecurity. There's a lot of judgment inside of self. There's not a lot of acceptance, and there tends to be quite a bit of fear and defense. And the more unconscious they are of those judgments and the projections, you might say they have a big shadow, or someone who is really presents themselves only as one particular layer of who they are, one personality trait, and they're always in that personality. So then they tend to have bigger shadows because there's a lot that they're not willing, there's a lot of denial, a lot of repression of that particular quality or those particular qualities.
Does everybody have a shadow?
Yes. Including the earth, including time, including the universe, everything has a shadow. It's not just a psychological term.
Interesting. What do you mean by that, the earth and time?
The percentage of the universe that is dark matter is upwards of 67%. So most of what is going on in space is unknown. It's dark matter. It's dark energy. That doesn't mean it's bad. It's just it's unknown. It's not visible. We don't know what goes on inside of those realms. So it's not something, you know, sometimes people really chase the light, and we like to think about things in terms of light. But the reality is there is much more darkness in the universe than there is light.
I was once in a workshop, and it's very interesting exercise. There were leaders assigned out of this rather large group of 50 people. I was one of the leaders that was chosen, and they asked us to go in the middle of the room, and they had chairs sitting around us and said, basically, if you have a reaction to one of these leaders, good, bad, but a reaction, I want you to go sit in their group. And it was very interesting because this was about to embark on shadow work, that everything yeah. people were saying, I saw this person across the room, and they just seem so full of themselves, or you know, they're better than other people. Oh, they're such a know-it-all. Or, they just rub me the wrong way. Mm-hmm. There were so many things that came out of people, and then yeah. came a couple of days of looking deep inside of, and where is that true for you? And mm-hmm. what does that look like, and how have you impacted yourself and other mm-hmm. people? Really profound, life-changing work.
Mm-hmm. I would say it was the most necessary work in order to have empowerment and freedom.
Why do you say that?
Because there's so much good, rich awareness and connection that happens through shadow work. It is the place that we are most in touch with what is not known, and because so much of life is not known, and so many of us are only comfortable with what we know, what we can control. So when we make relationship to the shadow and we can have a level of neutrality, a level of reverence and humility for what we don't know, it tends to open us up to feeling more empowered and more clear about what we actually do have control over and where we need to surrender. It helps with will attunement, and it helps us feel more safe, I guess, to some degree, and trusting of life unfolding instead of trying to control everything and constantly projecting or worrying about what's going to happen.
Oh, boy. All right. Well, I feel really guilty as charged with the last thing you just said. So
yeah.
will you share a little bit more about the controlling and the worrying, all of that?
Yeah. I mean, that you know, being able to sit with what we don't know, sit with discomfort, is a lot of just being able to trust that what arises is okay. I mean, shadow work, done at its best, is really about finding the health in a person, not making the judgments wrong, not making the defense strategies wrong, not seeing them as survival strategies, seeing them as repressed energy, that there's power and dynamism within what is disowned. Oftentimes, there are very good things that are disowned in us, and that when we come to fruition around even the more fearful or what we might judge as negative things, it's very freeing to let go of that. So it's a process to be able to do this kind of work on oneself or with a practitioner, and there is a certain amount of ground and self-compassion and self-reflection that we need in order to feel safe enough to explore our inner shadow.
Mm-hmm. And one of the things that I've seen out in the world that's fascinating, there are those who just get this and are willing to go headfirst. It's very brave work to
yeah.
look at oneself like
courage.
This.
Yeah.
A lot of courage. And I've also noticed other people who become baffled by it and say, well, you know, that person's a drama queen. This is just an example I'm creating right now, but that person's a drama queen. You know, they're full of gossip, and I really don't like them, and there's a lot of stuff that comes up. It's not just an awareness of someone and a choice not to be with them, but obviously is a big reaction, which for most of us is an indicator, okay, there's a lot of shadow going on for this person. And where I see the confusion happen is they think it equals exactly how it shows up in their world, as opposed to being a quality that manifests, and it could look differently, but have that same source behind it. Do you understand what I mean?
Say more.
So the confusion I notice with people is they think shadow is, well, if you do this like this, and it's supposed to also be shadow for me, it must be so for me, exactly. I must be doing that same exact negative or positive thing out in the world and disowning it, but clearly I don't do that, so it couldn't be my shadow. But I think it's not that. It's not a tit for tat. It's not exactly how the lovely person who's mirroring what's disowned within us. It's actually there's something deeper. And I can tell you in the work I've done it around it that I have had to go pretty deep into a creation to find sometimes where that lives within me.
Mm-hmm.
And when I do, it's enormous to find the impact I have had on myself, and I got to be real, the impact I've had on a lot of other people.
Yeah, sometimes.
So,
I hear what you're saying. Sometimes it's really...
Yeah.
Sometimes people outwardly project or treat other people in a particular way, in a negative way, because of something that's going on with them. And then maybe we do the same thing, but we actually treat ourselves that way. We don't treat others that way.
Right. Yes. And it does. It isn't always, the irritation doesn't always show up exactly the same in us, but there is a connection to that behavior or way of being out in the world that is ours. And I guess my point is, for those who get baffled by shadow, stay with it. Don't make it so simple. Like, really stay with taking the thread through to where the yarn is, the ball of yarn, because you'll probably find a whole belief that got created, a reason why you went to that, and a lot of things, and it's very powerful work.
Yeah, I think the simplest way to recognize it in ourselves is when we have a very strong reaction to something where we really feel triggered and we don't necessarily know exactly what it is that's triggering us, even though we may have quite a few judgments about a person or a situation. And I think any kind of that extreme reaction, you know that there's a big polarity up. And when that polarity is up, we know that there's work to be done. There's something that wants to be created and something that wants to be destroyed with that level of polarity.
So big reaction as opposed to just an awareness about something that causes nothing on your internal Richter scale, but something that really makes the needle move big mm-hmm. time and probably repetitively so, that's where you can start to look. Well, when we come back, we're going to be speaking with Angelica about relationships in regard to the shadow, about shame, and some case studies. So maybe we can start to better understand how this operates. I am thinking and speaking with our frequent Dare to Dream radio guest, Angelica Singh. She's been on many times, and I highly recommend you go back and listen to some of her previous shows and our conversations. They've all been so different and amazing. And Angelica, here at the top, I just want to ask you about shame. It's more and more coming into my sphere, this word shame, and mm-hmm. how it affects people. Does shame tie in to our shadow at all?
For sure. It certainly can. Shame is a quality that obviously can be, it's very lineage-based at times. It's something that we carry culturally. The lineage can carry it, meaning the people that we come from, our ancestors, groups of people, certain cultures use it very specifically for authority. And it's a way to control power, basically, at one level. It's also a biological and evolutionary mechanism of all beings. Dogs use it. Humans use it to make sure that the collective survival is there. So it's got a biological basis, and there are versions of what some people might call healthy shame, meaning something we might use when we're younger to help our children grow and stay away from danger. And then as it gets more intense or difficult, it can be very, very traumatizing for a young person to be shamed or a child to be shamed. And then it really lives in the body. And it can be so painful and uncomfortable that we begin to repress the feeling of it and become an image of who we need to be in order to never feel that feeling again. Because shame really is, I am bad at the being level. It's a feeling that really cuts us off from our integrity, from our dignity, from the preciousness of our soul. And it is extremely detrimental to our ability to live an authentically expressive life. And yet we could have a very powerful and big life on the outside and have this very big shadow piece where we feel like a fraud, or we feel that our life has no meaning or it's empty because we're still disconnected from the soul strength and the authenticity of our connection to source and our dignity as a soul.
Wow, these are powerful, powerful. I don't know if people out there are relating to this and starting to see some of your life patterns. shadow and relationships. Is the shadow what blows up relationships? Is that what happens? It's so rare to hear about people who actually are still together. Obviously, it happens. I know people who are still together. But in general, it's very rare. So what blows up relationships? And if it's shadow, why?
Well, this is a very, it's a complex question. I think that the thing to understand about viewing our shadow or doing shadow work from a place of health is to understand that we're never going to get rid of our shadow. There are always going to be parts of ourselves that we're coming to know, that we're coming into relationship with. We are unfolding all the time, and there's always a level of mystery to that. Unfortunately, when we have a lot of limitations and defenses and fears, and we use control to suppress who we are and in order to feel safe, we don't make relationship with the parts of us that are unknown in a healthy way. So first, there really needs to be a relationship that allows us to unfold through a lens of health, through a sense of I'm whole and I don't know who I am all the time, right? So in relationships, that's the same thing. And because repressed energy and shadow energy or disowned parts are so strongly motivating, inevitably, when we make relationship with someone, it's not the conscious mind that is making the relationship. It's the archetypical unconscious shadow patterns that are actually making relationships. And that can take a year. It can take 2 years. It can take 10 years for it to really unfold over time. And typically, we choose the perfect catalyst for that eruption. And there is often shame and guilt mixed into that.
Wow. So there is an eruption. It can take time. It can be quick, or it can take a decade to unfold. Why archetypically we have chosen someone as a catalyst. The next step to freedom. So if we want to heal our shadow, if we want to start to know our disowned selves, what is that road to compassion and healing?
Yeah. Well, I would say, I teach a whole workshop on this, and part of it is really understanding projection, understanding that we tend to project the things that are disowned in us onto others. And that process, these are big pieces of just basic psychological awareness in order to have a really accurate picture and reflection. I really like to use prominent archetypes and polarities like victim, perpetrator, entitlement and deprivation, grandiosity and inadequacy, and archetypes like being persecuted one, or the scapegoat, or the outcast. Those polarities and archetypes really live in all of us at a collective level. And when we have a better relationship to how our patterns repeat themselves and really how do they serve, asking that question, how do they serve? How is this serving me? Because otherwise, it's often the trauma of the situation. We just feel like, why me? Why is this happening to me? I've been nothing but nice to you and you cheated on me. I've been nothing but good to you and you treat me like crap. We are at some level attracting in those scenarios, and we have to start asking ourselves the right questions and have the acknowledgement that we are responsible in part for what's occurring to us. And it's not a responsibility that means, oh, it's your fault and you deserve to be treated this way. No, it's an empowering level of an ability to respond to say, what is the vibration or the unconscious energy and patterning that I'm carrying that is creating this situation so that I can know myself, so that I can transform it and reach a higher vibration in my being and really create what I want to create, not what my shadow is compelling me to create so that I can heal something. The shadow doesn't erupt or come up because it's trying to punish us or harm us. It's coming up because it's the process of evolution and transformation into more light.
Wow. Got it. So bringing up the darkness to really take a look, to really understand and process and invite back to our lives, this disownment, this dissociation, because it's ready for the light. So in other words, some of these things that feel so terrible and feel like we're a victim are actually a blessing for us, because without it, we wouldn't be able to integrate that.
Yeah,
right?
And we wouldn't grow. We wouldn't, you know, we would stunt our own growth. So oftentimes it's really a commitment to our own growth and our own learning that really needs to be there. There needs to be an acknowledgement and an understanding and a level of accountability that we actually matter and that our vibration matters and that we can change what's occurring for us. And then we really start the digging in process and the forgiveness practice and letting go, understanding that life is filled with lessons and learning, and it's essential to release judgments and old thoughts and limitations so that we can grow.
And this is on a personal level. What about a global level? What's going on in the world, in your estimation, that might be about shadow that we're experiencing?
Yeah, so I taught a whole workshop on collective shadow, and in actually this time, because of the difficulties and challenges that we face as a collective, a global collective, not just a Western culture collective or the United States, we have more connectivity than we've ever had at a technological level, and yet we are losing drastically social awareness, social connection,
right.
Real regulation, real soothing, real awareness about interdependency amongst people, that we need each other, that we are our health of our communities, sustain the growth and wellness of future generations. We have completely lost this to social media and technology. And the level at which technology and the media is able to manipulate us, not only through the information, but through the nervous system of getting people addicted to adrenaline-like dopamine squirts of highs from giving us a certain amount of that experience, of giving us a little injection of adrenaline. And so if we're not careful, we become these sort of addicted, bite-sized, Twitter-sized, that's all we can digest anymore. And that's not connection. That's not what people need. That's not what humans need. Humans need attunement, and that happens in a much slower, longer-range experience of connection and intimacy, and we're losing that. And that's a problem. So even though there's all this connectivity, there's actually less connectivity that is really painful. It's unhealthy, and it's not sustainable over time. And that's one of the problems. The other problem is understanding the polarities are building amongst these different archetypical energies, meaning there's a deep polarity of authoritarianism versus independence, and those are more collective pieces that we are playing into as individuals, where we have had a tremendous amount of choice in Western culture, and we haven't necessarily taken on the level of personal responsibility that we need to in order to become a sustainable, connected group or civilization.
And the message with my listeners, with you and I, the people in our world, certainly, is that we are all one, that there is no separation. But
yeah.
I'm seeing more separation happen than ever before, including, you know, this is just a light example, but even you will see on social media, on Facebook, which is supposed to be just a social network, not a political one, not a professional one, a social friends. And yet people write to each other these terrible things because of where they stand politically, religious, or otherwise, and in an anonymous way, as though hurting another person with their words is justified, one way or the other. And so do you maintain that it's possible to get back to this idea of all being one, to actually have a healing there on a global level, if we will take a look at this darkness, at this shadow?
Absolutely. I mean, the whole point of what I think we're being asked to participate in today's day and age is really to take a level of personal accountability, personal responsibility, looking more deeply and reflecting more deeply on how these energies are affecting us. I know so many people, including myself, who get really tension and anxiety about the level of fear that is disseminated through the media and violence. And it's very painful. And it makes people feel extremely helpless and powerless. And if we have a better sense of being able to work with our own material and understand our own shadow, we can rise above and see the goodness in others. Part of the biggest challenge of all the vitriol and the anger and the rage is that people are suffering and have been suffering for a long time, and anger feels good to somebody who's suffering because it gives them the sense of empowerment after so long feeling disempowered. I think that's some of the vitriol, the anonymous vitriol that you get from some of the social media posts, and everything turns into a polarity about a political dynamic as opposed to really looking at our own stuff. I mean, you see just a flagrant use of shadow material. I'm disempowered, I'm powerless, therefore I'm going to hurt you because I'm in so much pain, and that makes me feel more powerful.
When we come back, we'll be talking about how the psychologist Carl Jung called the place and how he described the shadow self. I'm speaking with Angelica Singh. This is Debbie Dashinger, Dare to Dream Radio. You can join me on Twitter at my name, Debbie Dashinger, D-A-C-H-I-N-G-E-R. Stay right there. We'll be right back. We are talking about the shadow, and this is Debbie Dashinger, and I've got Angelica Singh here. And there, I believe this started with the renowned Swiss psychologist, as far as my research for this show with you, Angelica, and going back, it seemed to start with the Swiss psychologist Carl Jung, who called the place of our unowned side, the shadow self, the part of us that stays unknown, unexamined, out of the light of our conscious awareness. He said it's the part that's denied or suppressed because it makes us uncomfortable or afraid. Whatever doesn't fit our image of our ideal self becomes our shadow. I would love you to talk about the split, this separation, shadow, and who we are ideally to ourselves and how it occurs.
Sure. So you had brought up shame earlier, and I think it's a really good example because what can happen, let's just say someone has, we're talking about a little boy who has a father who has a very high level of need for his child to be a good performer, to be a winner, right? And he only cares about that child's winning and that child's ability to perform and fit really the father's idea of his own disowned part, which is someone who's perfect, who's completely performance oriented and is a winner and only ever wins. So if the child shows up as mediocre or is challenged by something in a particular way at a very young age, they really get the message that you don't matter and you're not important, or you're bad at the being level if you're not winning, if you're not performing. So that provokes shame, particularly in children, because that's the quality of biological movement. That's the biological response to, oh, I must be bad. So we then live into the image of someone who is putting that level of pressure, the father's pressure, on that person. So this, the true self or the authentic self, who maybe needed a little more help or needs some emotional support and tenderness, has to be repressed and put down, and we have to live into that image, because it's too painful to experience the part of us that didn't get our needs met emotionally or felt bad at the being level. So really there are layers of grief, sometimes anger itself, deep feelings of inadequacy and judgment about our inadequacy, and then there's shame for being bad. All of that gets packed in, and you've got a person who only relates to themselves and grows a persona that can only win. And then their body and their psyche completely forms around that particular image, which in, you know, traditional biblical sense, we would call that pride. Even though it's shame-based, it's a version of pride because it's vanity, because it's a sense of there's this very strong investment in an inauthentic version of self. because nobody's perfect and a winner all the time. We all have challenges and shortcomings and places that we're mediocre and slow and need a little extra assistance, whether it's emotionally or mentally or physically. We all have vulnerability. And as a child, we can't protect ourselves from all of the impressional energy that we're taking on from what our parents need us to be, and we try desperately to live into that image so that they can love us. And we don't feel lovable if we're not that person. And we don't even remember that that's what happened, right? And sometimes we marry somebody who's in love with the image and not in love with us, right? And that's where shadow and eruption starts to happen, because ultimately we don't feel happy with that, because these other layers of being loved and seen for who we are that is more unconditional needs to arise in us. It's inevitable. Does that make sense?
And what about tips? Yes, like 100%. And even the way you described it for me felt like a layering. And no wonder we can't see what's going on when you have been indoctrinated at a very young age that you don't even recall. And, of course, it just seems right. It's your parents, even if it didn't feel good. And then on top of it, you feel shame. And on top of that, you feel judgment about your shame. And on top of that, you feel, and before you know it, there's all this disconnect that's happening. So powerful. What are the tips you can offer us about how we can find our shadow hot buttons and projections and how we can bring them to the light?
Well, patterns are a big one. You know, noticing that something keeps repeating itself, for sure. And noticing particular, like, you know, particular polarities or archetypes, like somebody who's, if you're always people-pleasing, you know, or if you notice that you have a pattern for having to always look good or always have, you know, your hair or your dress always perfect. I mean, these are ways that we're covering something up, we're repressing something. Or if you notice a very big reaction of sadness or something erupts in you, those are real signs that there's, or you attract in somebody who is really not at all who you thought they were. That's a big one too. You know, that I thought this person was completely this way, and then they turned out to be nothing like that. And that's another one. He was really nice when I met him, and now, you know, he turned out to be abusive and all of that. You know, not to just think that that's a random occurrence, right? Especially if it's happened more than once.
And if it's not a random occurrence, if it is actually something we're attracting, let's say somebody who has alcoholics in their life.
Yeah.
Maybe not every single relationship, but enough relationships, let's say a woman with a man with a woman, either way. But it's like, okay, I don't want to do this again. What do you think might be happening, or what can we take a look at so that that's not repeated ever again?
Well, that's a big question, because it could be different for everyone. I think that if you grew up with an alcoholic in your family or somebody who had addictive tendencies, you probably grew up around someone who really wasn't predictable and didn't have good boundaries with you, one way or the other. You know, their energy might have been very inconsistent and unpredictable, which typically leaves children feeling very unsafe and not having a strong sense of self. So this is, I think, a lot of what Al-Anon is and what happens in codependent relationships is that we can tend to deny that that person is an alcoholic, and we sort of enable through denial, right? Mm-hmm. We don't recognize it. And it's typically because there's a younger self in there that really doesn't feel strong enough to stand on their own. And so they get into these kind of codependent, merged relationships with addictive people who have addiction issues, and they don't always notice it at first, right?
Yes, huge. So that is really illuminating. I'm glad you shared that, because I wasn't sure if this was about people need to look inside at their own shadow around addiction, and for some of us that might be true. And for those of us who aren't, that there may be this other piece where there's the young self, as you say, still having this interaction, this unsafe, this not separating and bringing in that same chaotic energy. And I find it all fascinating. And we're coming towards the end. I have two very quick questions for you. What, Angelica, is the lesson that has taken you the longest to learn? What is the lesson that has taken you the longest to learn?
I would say that I believed that for me that there was an energy of needing to be more loved or to be more be more loving with others, even though I don't think I was ever not loving. But I'm a person who, I always think that people have different mirrors. I tend to be very polarizing for people. So they either really like me or they really have a reaction to me. And that's just, there's nothing I can do to change that. But as a younger person, I thought, well, if I'm more loving with people, or if I'm kinder, if I just love myself more, I would vibrate differently. And I realized that as I did more and more work and learned to love myself more, the surprise was is that I became more discerning and I had better boundaries and I didn't care if other people liked me or not, and I still had love and a much less judgmental attitude, much more accepting of people, but I had discernment. That was the lesson that took me the longest, that boundaries mattered more than having no boundaries.
And your ritual or practice that you use every day that keeps you grounding, what is the one ritual or practice that keeps you grounded?
Oh, those are things I do all day long. I like to do, when I do the dishes, I feel the hot water on my hands, and I feel so much gratitude and goodness for just having hot water and being able to clean the dishes and be in love in that moment. It can bring tears to my eyes, and since you do the dishes almost every day or every day, I get to have that experience a lot.
That's beautiful. Thank you so much, Angelica, for being on Dare to Dream and talking about the shadow with us today.
Thank you so much. I hope it was useful.
Yes, and you can find out more about her at angelicasingh.com. It's S-I-N-G-H. I end today's show with this quote from Carl Jung. If you imagine someone who is brave enough to withdraw all his projections, then you get an individual who is conscious of a pretty thick shadow. Such a man has saddled himself with new problems and conflicts. He has become a serious problem to himself, as he is now unable to say that they do this, or that they are wrong, or that they must be fought against. Such a man knows that whatever is wrong in the world is in himself. And if he only learns to deal with his own shadow, he has done something real for the world. He has succeeded in shouldering at least an infinitesimal part of the gigantic unsolved social problems of our day.